Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Evolver, sponsored by The Alchemist Kitchen, hosted by Ken Jordan.
We live in remarkable times. Something extraordinary is happening for more than a few of us, and I've had the privilege of a front row seat to observe it, a view that not many have been as lucky as me to see. For the last decade or so, I've been working with a company named Evolver, which I co-founded. It's a consciousness hub for the global transformational community. We publish an online magazine called Reality Sandwich. We do online learning through Evolver Learning Lab. We have a space, the Alchemist Kitchen, which is a botanical dispensary and tonic bar off the Bowery in Lower Manhattan that you can find online as well. These are all outgrowths of a scene that goes from Burning Man to the mindfulness movement to the expanding interest in deep yogic practices to the recent mainstream flirtation with shamanism and psychedelics, where people are connecting to spirit, often through unorthodox and anomalous experiences, in a heartfelt and authentic way. For many of us, this sudden crack in the sky moment can be a shock. It may have happened at a rave on ecstasy, when suddenly you're seeing auras, or during a company-sponsored meditation, when a brilliant light gets switched on inside your head, or a blast of kundalini energy shoots up your spine during your regular Thursday night Ashtanga class. It can strike like a lightning bolt, and suddenly our lives have been rearranged. The old stories no longer fit, and we look for a way to make sense of a world that has suddenly grown so strange, but far more beautiful than we ever imagined possible. This scene is emerging without the familiar Western cynicism that we know so well. It's never fully without irony, but the irony quotient has definitely dropped. Most remarkable to me is how the typical attitude towards spiritual experiences that simply discards them as tangential to what really matters, what so-called serious people think is important, just isn't present in the same way. A lot of people are getting tapped on the shoulder and are having profound visionary experiences. From my particular perch, I've been privy to personal stories like the VP of a major global financial institution who met his indigenous shaman teacher one weekend during an ayahuasca ceremony, walked into his boss's office the following Monday morning, to resign from his seven-figure corporate gig to study with the shaman full-time and eventually become a curandero himself, or the senior advertising executive who, after a particularly powerful kundalini yoga experience, realized that she could not continue to sell the bullshit that she had been selling and had to do something more in alignment with her true values. I come to this as a committed secular materialist for most of my life, without the least interest in anything spiritual. I didn't know what the word spiritual meant. I thought it meant something like compassionate or empathetic. Then I had a profound tantric awakening experience, totally unexpected. One spring in Berkeley, California, when I was working on a keynote for a technology conference where I was speaking, I walked outside in the afternoon and suddenly found myself completely entranced by the plants on the street that were somehow talking to me. They didn't actually use words, but they got my attention. I had not taken any substance. I was not close to a psychological break. I was content with my life and how I understood the world to be, that the brain creates reality. It's all mechanical and rational, that consciousness emerges like a lucky miracle from the biochemistry of physical matter out of a universe of chaos, that intelligence is a strictly human trait, that what goes on inside the skull is all that can be verified, and probably all there is. That's essentially the secular materialist worldview that most of us were raised with, and it's the worldview that our society propagates through all its social and political structures. Its assumptions form the ground that we walk on and that we base our practical life decisions on. I suddenly had a crack in that reality. The plants were talking to me. I was shocked, but the state I was in was beyond shock because I was also entranced. I was fully absorbed by the active intelligence of nature. It was an extraordinary experience, and it led to powerful dreams, which led to other mystical zaps of a variety of modalities. I had my first trip to Burning Man around that time. That sure helped open things up. One thing led to another, and I became aware of a reality that is far more nuanced, beautiful, and full of potential than anything I had the slightest clue was available to me before. I also found that my experience was happening in parallel with other people who were also getting tapped on the shoulder by something powerful, each in their own way. And I'd be having these incredible personal conversations with truly inspiring people about their own awakening experiences and how they bring that awakened awareness into what they do in the world. Those conversations would help to fire me up and keep me dedicated to pursuing my own path. But I was aware that these were not public conversations. They were not widely shared. It's always been assumed that the subtleties of your own spiritual experiences are not meant to be talked about in public. They weren't meant to be shared outside of a small select group, usually your fellow practitioners of Tibetan Buddhist meditation or Chinese energy healing or ayahuasca plant spirit medicine, whatever it is that's calling you. That's the crew you would talk to about the visions you've had, the shadow material that snuck up and whacked you, and your integration process, the realization that it rocked your world into your daily life practice and enable you to be your true self at your best. That's it. You would call it there. You wouldn't talk about this with almost anyone else. But I was having these conversations with an awful lot of fascinating people. And what was becoming apparent to me is that there were now so many folks out there who are experiencing the same thing in their own lives that there's a receptive community ready to participate in these conversations. That's the purpose of this podcast, to bring frank, unfiltered conversation about what it is to connect to spirit to the public. Our guest today is Aubrey Marcus. You may know Aubrey from his frequent appearances on the Joe Rogan podcast or from his new New York Times best-selling book, Own Your Day, Own Your Life, Optimized Practices for Waking, Working, Learning, Eating, Training, Playing, Sleeping, and Sex. He's the CEO of the biohacking company Onnit, which he partners on with Joe Rogan, and he's the producer and co-director of two documentaries about plant spirit medicine, Ayahuasca and Hachuma. In this interview, we discuss the role of sacred plants and psychedelics in Aubrey's own personal awakening, and also talk about other teachings that have been important to him of having a profound impact on his life, including the work he did with the books of Paul Selig. We also talk about his own sense of personal mission to wake people up and the role of his new book, his first, as an extension of that mission. I think you'll find Aubrey to be a remarkable, heartfelt speaker, articulate about his own experience, and a person who has an inspiringly clear sense of what he's here to do in the world. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Part of the vision for Evolver included an online marketplace where products made by community members could be offered to others. The Alchemist Kitchen grew out of this marketplace. It's a botanical dispensary that offers the highest quality whole plant remedies, botanical medicines, and beauty products from the best artisanal herbal makers from across the country. You can find herbal products on the Alchemist Kitchen site to help you sleep better, reduce pain, boost energy, find calm, think sharper, and much more. And if you happen to be in New York City, come by the Alchemist Kitchen flagship location. It's at 21 East 1st Street, between the Bowery and 2nd Avenue, on the border between the East Village and Soho. You can have a state-changing herbal elixir from the Tonic Bar and chat with one of the staff herbalists about the products we've curated and what might be best for you. In my own experience, as I began to be aware of what I eat, cut out processed foods and refined sugar, and get in better shape through yoga, etc.,
My body's sensitivity to what I put into it increased a lot. And I discovered that the right kind of plant medicine could be more effective than pharmaceuticals while being gentler on the system. And I started to pay attention more to what my body was telling me, which took some time because I grew up eating the worst kinds of junk and assumed that feeling bloated and sluggish was just part of the human condition. I discovered how the judicious use of plant allies could help to boost my system and shift me from worrying about warding off illness to maintaining a high level of wellness. On thealchemistkitchen.com, you'll find a blog with lots of information about herbal wellness and an assortment of products that will inspire you to see the connection between your body and the plant kingdom in a whole new way. The Alchemist Kitchen is devoted to the power of plants. And if you stop by the spot on East 1st Street, mention the Evolver podcast and get 10% off any purchase of herbal remedies or CBD. Aubrey, thank you for being here. Let's start by exploring what it means to you to live life at its fullest and most rewarding.
Well, I think this goes back to a vision that I had actually on the medicine. So I was on Huachuma down in South America in Peru.
What's Huachuma?
Huachuma is San Pedro, uh-huh. And it's the more traditional indigenous name before they renamed it and Catholicized it and called it St. Peter. It was guarding the gates of heaven, which certainly it feels like when you're on that medicine. And
It's a cactus,
yeah. And a very serotonergic, for those people who haven't experienced it, feels something between combining psilocybin and MDMA into an experience. Has the visual component, mostly closed-eyed, some open-eyed, but... and then just a really hard opening experience. And I had this vision of a bunch of people that were like wind up nutcrackers, and everybody was moving around all automatic. And as far as I could look, everybody was moving around automatic. And so was I. I was automatically moving around. Chuck, 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 chuck. And then finally I started to slow the mechanisms of my own movement down and look at my body and say, wait a minute, why am I doing all this? Why am I doing all of these automatic things, all of this unconscious programming, all of these things that are driven by fear and driven by greed and driven by validation? And I stopped and I just sat down for a second. And then eventually, after sitting still with myself in this vision, I reached out and I touched somebody else on the shoulder who was also going through this automatic motion. And then they shook out of it and they're like, whoa, what the hell am I doing? And then I saw that person touch somebody else and that person touch somebody else and that person touch somebody else. And to me, that's always been this guiding light of like what I'm here to do. And I think what a lot of us are here to do is to become aware of the unconscious and subconscious programs that prevent us from being fully aware, fully empowered, having full agency over our lives, so that we can choose how we want to play this game, so that this game isn't played out like some tragic movie where we're continually driven to seek our fears and seek our validations and seek the lessons that we need to learn, but we can actually intentionally go through our lives like heroes.
I have levels of fully aware.
Right.
Right. There's the, oh yeah, Jocelyn just walked in now, went into the bathroom, walked back to the other office. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm kind of noticing certain things that are happening. There's some rumbling outside. There's a bunch of trucks. We're in Manhattan. We're off of Houston Street. It's loud in the background. That's just the way. I'm aware of certain things. Mm-hmm. Then there's the aware of, why am I doing what I'm doing with my life on a basic level? Is this am I in harmony with or in alignment with what's really available to me as a person in the world that's my highest expression? And then there's this other level of aware, which is actually kind of what I want to get at a little bit, which is we're all interconnected in this wild way.
Yeah.
When you're thinking of fully aware, where are you?
Well, that's certainly a big part of it, right? Like, that connection to source, that connection to the universal, that connection that we seem to plug in and unplug, plug in and unplug, depending on the circumstance and situation. And hopefully as we move through time, we stay more and more connected. You know, we're able to listen to those small whispers that come from our higher self or come from source and continue to allow that to guide us without blocking and saying, I got this under control. Don't worry about this, you know, intergalactic soul traveler. I got this. I was born a few years ago. I know this world and I'm going to figure it out. And, you know, so that's certainly a part of it. And then the other part is really getting down into the interior universe and understanding what are those forces that drive you? What are the forces that have driven you since you were a child? You know, what are those things that have happened to you and the circumstances that you were raised in that are still affecting you now? You know, like I've become, even through all the plant medicine, I started my plant medicine journey when I was 18, did a vision quest out in the mountains, and it's been, you know, nearly 20 years. And it took till last year that I realized that I was, you know, playing out a same fear pattern that was developed from my father with pretty much every male figure in my life. You know, like I wouldn't fully trust them because my father was erratic with his anger and it was extremely hard to predict. So, you know, any one thing could set him off any amount of days later. So I never really trusted my communications, nor did I trust my friendships with male friends, but I was, because I had a really, you know, easy and comfortable relationship with my mother, I was always able to get along with women really well. And it's not that I couldn't get along with men, I just never trusted them. Wow. And then so I started to unravel that. I was like, why is this? Like, why can't I feel comfortable in any male friendship? And I was like, oh, well, that's probably some shit from my dad. So, and then I really started to look at that. And that's another level of self-awareness.
Right. So this is like a year ago?
This is like a year ago. Yeah, and I've been talking about it on some other podcasts, and there's more stuff even now. Yeah. I'm 37 years old, and I've been on the fucking path. You know, I've been doing the work, and blindsided by how little I actually know, not only about the universe, but about myself.
I got a bunch of years on you, man, and this does not stop. Yeah. There is no conclusion to that, you know, to that journey. Yeah. There's always going to be this other level. But so then that's a real question of like awareness and being totally connected, like, so some of it, I'm really curious for you. You said you thought through what your relationship with your dad, mm-hmm. right? And actually I heard you did an incredible conversation with Tim Ferriss about this on mm-hmm. his podcast. And I just recommend people go check that out. I don't want to rehash that here necessarily. It's a really beautiful conversation. Were you thinking through these things and you started to really kind of come to some kind of logical conclusion in terms of your awareness, or was it a feeling thing? Was there a body thing going on?
You know, this was a lot of times people think that, you know, all of your kind of epiphany moments happen when you're on psychedelics. If you do psychedelics, all of them come on psychedelics. And that's not really the case. Psychedelics open this channel that allows this constant kind of communication. And, you know, really this awareness started to come through a friendship that I have with Kyle Kingsbury, who's now, you know, one of my best, he is my best male friend. He's a guy also been on the medicine path, a former UFC fighter, just a great guy, but he just really leads with his heart. He's about as secure a human being as I've ever met in my life, like as stable, as heart opened, and as like, he's just a giant. He's a mountain of a man. And as my friendship with him developed, and I still found myself, you know, kind of at arm's length, I was like, there's something fucked up with me, because this guy, I could trust him to the end of the earth.
So you're asking yourself this. You're talking to your friends about this,
I did talk to Whitney about it. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I'm also just like, you know, he'd give me a big hug and I'd be like, yeah, okay, that's enough. Yep. Right.
Now you've known him for a long time.
No, I haven't known him for that long, but I think he was so the example of someone that there was no question, I had no evidence possible that I could present that there was any reason not to trust him. And so any feeling of separation that I was feeling, I knew at that point, I was like, this is on me. This is 100% on me.
So how did you ask yourself this question? What was your process?
Well, it was after we were hanging out one time and he gave me this big old hug. And I was like, fuck, I was uncomfortable with that hug. And that doesn't make, and I think back and I was like, I've never been really comfortable with any hug from a guy. And I was like, but especially with him, like, what is the reason why? Why is that? And that's because I realized at that point that it had to be me. It wasn't the world anymore. It had to be me. And then so I started really looking at it and started really unpacking that and then surrendering to the truth of, what my childhood situation was. And then once I was aware, then you can start relaxing and just kind of naturally opening it.
How did you ask that question of yourself? Was that just, hey, I'm walking in the park?
Yeah, it just becomes, present.
You didn't do a special mm-hmm. retreat for this.
You didn't go
off to the mountains for 3 days and really work through it.
No, it just, when something enters my awareness, then it's there with me in all the quiet spots. So when I'm journaling at night, I'll write about it. When I'll think about it, I'll mull it over. My brain is always kind of like working. So it's like starts this cascade of thought and awareness that eventually, is a pattern that I continue to work on. So the next time we're hanging out, I was like, all right, more trust. More trust, more openness, less guardedness. And then next time, more trust, more openness, more less guardedness.
Did you talk to him about this? Did he know you were going through this?
No, I don't even think I really mentioned. I think maybe I mentioned it later. But this was just a process that I knew for me. He didn't have to change anything, and I didn't want to even put it in his head to make any alteration of his behavior, because I just had to adapt. I had to adapt to that. And then through time, it's been incredibly, like, way, way, way more comfortable. And that's unraveled in just a different degree of comfort in communication, in hanging out, and just friendship. I just feel closer to my friends now than I had ever before. And it started with just simple awareness. And then, I've done plenty of practices throughout, since then that have kind of helped illuminate different facets of it. But really the first key was that initial awareness, that willing to put all of the gaze onto myself, to hold that mirror up and really, with ruthless honesty, still full of love, but ruthless honesty, take a look at myself and say, all right, what's going on here?
Man, that's hard. It's hard.
It is, say,
oh, I got an issue. I got this problem.
Right.
So you feel like psychedelics helped you develop the capacity to pursue that kind of that approach?
Undoubtedly, because psychedelics actually opened up the perspective shift that even allows me to be a self-observer. Like, I'm not even sure that I would have been able to step aside of my ego enough to even observe myself and observe the ego if it wasn't for psychedelics shining a light on who I really am and what my ego is and what my body is. Like, it allowed me the vantage point to kind of stretch those things apart and take a look at all the different pieces so that I actually have a perspective to observe from. And I don't know if I would ever got that without psychedelics.
So do you have a psychedelic practice that you pursue over time? Do you think about it methodically, or is it just sort of like, oh man, I got a call, guy's got some acid, I should just run out this party?
As I said, it's been almost 20 years, and I've been on the path for a long time. And at this point, sometimes there's certain things that I'm called to work on personally. But a lot of times this is about, one of the priorities for my life now is, kind of parlaying on what I was saying earlier, is building deeper relationships with the people I really care about. So my friends, my girlfriends, everybody who's really important to me in my life, I want to just build those relationships. And so I find that a lot of the journeys that I take are almost journeys with key people that I really want to experience something more with. Like, go, back to that kind of ritualistic tribal sense where you all sit down in the dark room and you drink the cup and you blow out the candle. I mean, that's an incredibly bonding experience. And I think for me, it's really about the friendships and the kinships that I have with the people in the room as much as anything now, because I do feel that psychedelics have given me the tools to really hone in on the issues that I need to hone in on. And so I don't need to continually run to them to illuminate new problems. I got plenty of problems I'm aware of and plenty of ways that I can start to work through those. And certainly the psychedelics still help. But for me, it's more about, bonding with those people I love.
Right. Because there's a dictum you kind of hear a lot about it. Listen, especially from folks from, who were the early meditators in, you know, in the States, who started taking acid maybe in the 60s and 70s, found a meditation practice, stopped doing psychedelics, and then the line that they use is, when you get the message, you can hang up the phone, right? You don't need to keep doing psychedelics if you're going to develop a real spiritual practice. That is, psychedelics is just an opener. That's not my experience.
No, it keeps opening more.
Yeah.
It keeps opening more and more, deeper levels. And I think it's, that's great for people who can do that. I'm too thick-headed and too dumb.
I feel the same way. I'm way too thick. I can't
do it. I forget
too
easily. You know, so I need to get whacked on the head every once in a while
exactly
with a couple grams
of
psilocybin.
That's exactly how I talk about it. It's just like, man, I got to get hit in the head. Yeah. If I don't get hit in the head, it's not going to happen. So how have you found your psychedelic experiences have changed over 20 years?
Well, you know, it's...
And I ask that because
when
you start, a lot's unfamiliar, and you can go in a certain place, but it doesn't necessarily, like, you know, it's not always... I mean, it can be really mind-blowing, but then it's like, where's the context? And when, sure. As you go deeper with a practice... Things really do change, right?
I've been fortunate in that out of the gate, my very first experience was impeccable. I mean, it was with a shaman in the mountains, drinking a mushroom tea, fully, like full ceremony. And that's how I was inducted into it. And then every time I've drank ayahuasca, it's been in Peru with a true maestro, Curandero. And like, I've really kept to the ritualized path. And that isn't to say that I haven't done some mushrooms at a festival or some MDMA at a festival or, you know, done some acid and just cruised around. Like, I've had those experiences as well, but I learned early the value of set and setting and the value of the right practitioner, you know, the right provider, the right medicine at the right time. And I've really, you know, kind of stuck to that. So that's been a really helpful guide and something that I always recommend to everybody. Like, you have to be very careful with your situation, with your setting, with the medicine. Make sure that you're not just doing this haphazardly, because it's not a panacea. It's not always going to be helpful, you know, and there's lots of times where you can steer into really deep water that if you don't have someone, you know, a lifeguard there to help get you out, you know, it's going to be really challenging. So I've been fortunate with that. But what I've seen is that, you know, I'll go through periods where I think, you know, I got my shit figured out. You know, this is going to be no big deal. And then I'll go into a ceremony and then something will hit me and I'll be like, oh my God, I'm so dumb. I was a scared little kid before this. And then it'll feel like I evolved an entire lifetime, you know, by the time I'm out. Like, wow. Aubrey was so cute before this ceremony, you know, and now look at him, he's all grown up, and then I'll do it again. Oh, and I'll be like, oh, Aubrey was so cute before this last ceremony, now he's all grown up. Yeah. And that process just continues to unfold.
So the way you were talking about your approach to psychedelics, it sounds like a lot of this has to do with setting an intention,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a social situation and not a fully realize ceremonial context, you can kind of bring a ceremonial mindset into that. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, of course.
So that the training you get from being in a ceremonial context, right? Working in ceremony, where you realize that the process is one of going deeper for your own self-betterment, even through darkness, right? That when you're with a group of friends on a picnic day in the park with some mushrooms, there's that element to that that enables you to stay in an intentional relationship to the experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And also just knowing that, like, and you know, we have had that experience, a couple grams of mushrooms outdoors in a little playground area, and it's just beautiful. But, you know, you'll know that, all right, so if those hellish visions come where all of a sudden it's skulls and demons and fire and swords or spiders or whatever the hell your mind can conjure, you can look at that and not go like, oh my God, where am I going? Well, how will I ever get out? You look at that and go, oh, wow, the dark side, I see you. That's beautiful too. And, you know, and just kind of send it love, and then it'll shatter into 1,000 butterflies, you know, right, before right, you right. know it. And it's not going to freak you out. You know, like, it's just like, okay, here's, this is the movie that's playing as I flip through the astral channel right now. And, you know, this is kind of clearing through my mind, and you don't attach your emotions to it. You don't attach these fears and these resistance points, this kind of like, oh my God, let me out of here. When is this trip going to end? What is going on? And it's those emotions and feelings and that resistance that ends up creating a bad trip and ends up creating unfinished work. But if you just kind of stick with it and go like, okay, well, here we are in hell. Let's see how, let's see it. Let's check it out. Let's look at it like it was a, like a beautiful painting of hell, you know, and let's explore it and see the nuances of it, but not get our emotions wrapped up in it. And sure enough, it'll change into something else and you can continue to move on.
Yeah. So when you're in a ayahuasca experience, a lot of folks have encounters. Right, like in DMT experiences in general, but in ayahuasca ones sort of specifically, because they have more time than a DMT experience to kind of unpack what's coming at you.
Yeah.
And they've got, it's a sense of a presence that's outside the self. Does that does that resonate for
Duh.
You? Duh. Okay, yeah, you know, I just want to make sure I'm not, you know, falling on deaf ears here. So that thing that's outside the self, do you find that that relationship evolves and changes as you do more medicine work over time? What is that? What is that thing out there? When is it dark sometimes? Why is it not so dark other times? What's yeah. going on there? You can start to separate it out.
I mean, it doesn't seem like one thing. It seems like there's multidimensional. We have multidimensional access, you know. And I think there's, and the South American shamans, they talk about, you know, 9 dimensions. And you know, I don't know if it's exactly 9, but, you know, I think there's the final dimension wherever you can go. And I think we're, you know, the way I like to look at ourselves is we're like a toothpick that's through an onion. And the onion layers are all the dimensions, but we're the toothpick. And so we cover all of the dimensions. And so from the very core dimension or the very outer dimension, depending on how you look, that's our connection to God. That's our connection to the unicity, to source, to when the universe collapses into a single point, like the Big Bang, you know, where everything is one and nothing is differentiated and God breathes as one entity alone, you know, we're connected to that and we carry that little piece with us in our heart. And
I like the toothpick. That's
yeah,
good. What so color's the toothpick? The toothpick?
Rainbow. Rainbow. Why not? I don't know. What else would it be? I don't know. And so in the 9th dimension, you know, we have access to that. And that's like a 5-MeO DMT experience. You feel like you can go all the way to that identification point where you dissolve into the somatic body of the unicity, the universe, God, whatever your vocabulary permits. So you dissolve into that and you get to feel that kind of 9th dimensional presence and then drop down one level and it's more like an archetypal, you know, purview that you could call the 8th dimension where there's large forces, you know, Jesus, Lucifer, if you wanted to call it in the biblical sense, there's these kind of large polarities that you can kind of wrangle with, that you can anthropomorphize very easily into beings or whatever, but they're really just archetypal forces. And then drop another level.
Yeah, I just want to say, just with that, I have a lot of problems with the anthropomorphization of those energies.
Right.
Because the society does so much to go like, oh, you know, you're talking about God. Yeah, God's that white guy with a long beard sitting on that chair over there. And he's got a staff and he's going to fuck you if you don't do the right thing. And it's like the whole thing becomes so trapped in the storytelling
of the religiosity.
And then becomes every religious thing. And I really appreciate you noting that when you connect to this stuff, the bodies, the human body aspect of it melts away. I mean, there's an aspect that can show up that way, but you know,
but it's not that.
It's not that.
It's just a way for us to understand a collection of light and energetic force. How do we picture that when it splashes into our brain so we understand it? Well, maybe it's a fucking giant dude with horns. You know, like I've had visions of the devil, and he, you know, he's appeared to me as a world crusher, like large as the universe, giant flaming horns made of cosmic fire, and you know, like okay, that made sense to me, but that's not what he is. No, no, you know, that's not what it is. That's
our brain.
That's our brain.
That's our brain trying to make sense of
trying to make
energetic
sense of
thing
an energy
coming at us.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, picture it this way. And you're like, oh, I get that. Yeah. Man, that guy's got horns.
Yeah.
Breathing fire. Yeah. Oh, okay, I get it. It's like, okay, thank you very much. That's helpful. Anyway, I'm sorry. You're on the eighth dimension.
Yeah. So it starts to break down into archetypal forces, and then, you know, kind of the more helpful, like soul level forces, more, and they would call that maybe the celestial would be the common terminology for that, like the more angelic realms, where it's like you have these guides that come to you that are seem completely outside of who you are, but are incredibly helpful and valuable, and maybe, and you know, it feels like actually our higher self resides in that same dimension. And then we also have the personality, more personality-based realms, which you would call the astral, down to the sixth dimension. So if that celestial, if you want to call it. I don't like these names because they have so much shit attached to them, but
right.
This is my experience of, like, our higher self, our, you know, that resides in the celestial in the seventh, and then we have the astral self, which is more of our personality self. These are beings that you can get into real arguments with, you know, like they have fears, they have motivations, they have a lot more will. It's a little bit more chaotic. Some are good, some are have less good intentions, and it's this kind of, you're just dealing with, like, you're in the marketplace to a certain degree, in like the spiritual marketplace. And then, you know, you can go on down to the physical dimensions, you know, physical dimensions of dreams and reality and who we are, you know, in the material sense.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, you know, and that's typically where we identify on the toothpick. We identify purely on the material side, but we don't realize that we're the entire toothpick, and we can change our point of identification, sometimes with the help of plants, and communicate with beings from these other dimensions, or access ourself as these beings in other dimensions. And it's really...
No, wait, slow down. Access ourself through these beings in other dimensions. How
well, access ourself
as
the beings.
As the beings. How have you experienced that?
Well, it's something that, like, Paul Selig will talk about, you know, and what even Jesus Christ talked about in the mystical teachings, like understanding who we are. And our name, not as Aubrey Marcus, but our name as I am here. I am here. I am here. And that would be our seventh dimensional identification self. Like that force that is constantly connected to God, the force that has been, you know, reincarnated into however many lives, that force that can choose physical expression or non-physical expression and is constantly guiding us through the lessons of our life.
I love this. Now, first of all, for people who don't know Paul Selig, you recently, and I advise everybody to listen to that podcast. I thought your interview on your show with Paul was amazing. It was my favorite interview that he's done. He's a good friend. I talk to him frequently. Could you explain to people who Paul is? Because I think that'd be
helpful.
Well,
Paul's an ordinary guy like you or I, and he has opened up a connection to what he calls the guides. And the guides would be in this kind of worldview that I've kind of painted here. These guys would be in that kind of celestial realm where they still have some form of identity, some form of personality, but they're purely benevolent beings that are trying to come through and be of service to humanity through Paul Selig. And they have a bit of a personality in that sometimes one of them will come through and they'll call everybody dear. And then sometimes they'll have different other terminology and different ways that they'll do that. So it's a collection of different entities that he's able to access. I was super skeptical going in.
Yeah, everybody should be.
And you
should be. Healthy to be skeptical.
Because and 9 out of 10 times, maybe 99 out of 100, you're probably going to be right.
Right.
You know, you're probably going to be right, and there's going to be a lot of person that's getting in the way of any message that's coming, or entirely all person. And, you know, there's a lot of people who've run a lot of scams and a lot of different endless amounts of shenanigans in regards to this. But every once in a while, you know, something comes through. And when you just look at the body of his work and you look at the message, it is absolutely undeniably valuable and seemingly impeccable. Like, it's beyond reproach. Like, there's no point at which he says something and you're like, maybe not. You know,
Yeah.
You just don't hear that.
Yeah. So Paul's, the first of the books is I Am the Word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to start. The most recently published one was...
Book of Truth.
The Book of Truth. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
And there's another one coming out in the fall. In the book, there are practices. There are things that the guides suggest that you do as a way of developing your capabilities, right? Have you been working with those practices? Are you reading through the books and
I've been listening to the books on audio tape.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. I've listened to them through several times, and I'll just put them on. And I feel like any time I put them on, it's like a little reboot. And it's funny, I haven't put one on in probably about 2 weeks, and it's been one of the more challenging 2 weeks of my life. And I think it's just that natural instinct when you're in resistance and your ego takes a hold. You'd even almost don't want to play the tapes because it's just going to remind you like, oh, man, of course. All right, here we are again. You know, here I am being dumb. You know, so it's probably about time I started playing those books again.
That's sweet. And then there are passages that the guide suggests that you repeat, that you read along with them as a way of embodying, essentially, the kind of energetic mission or energetic message that they're communicating.
I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. I am here. I am here. I am here.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I think a lot of folks now are having these moments where they're starting to see the stuff we're talking about. They're developing it in their own lives. But then they're thinking, how do I bring this into my daily, like my work? How I express myself through my daily actions beyond my relationships and my own personal practice, right? How do I turn this into something that's really in service and where I'm putting my creative energies into an alignment with my purpose, my higher purpose? It's a challenging thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm wondering how that works for you. What do you tell yourself? What do you actually tell yourself you're doing in the world?
Well, I'm really blessed in that I don't have that. You know, I've been able to create exactly what I wanted to create. And,
how did you do that?
Yeah. How did I do it? With a lot of help. With a lot of help, a lot of guidance, a lot of, I don't think I can fully take credit for anything positive that I've done. You know, I mean, it's mostly me getting out of the way whenever anything good happens. And, I think I'm here for a purpose. And part of that purpose is to help people become aware. And the reason I wrote this book you have right here on the table, Own the Day, Own Your Life, I wrote that to handle the base level of the pyramid, which is the human body and how it interplays with the human mind, and put together all of the intentional practices that'll take you through an entire day so that you can support the vessel, so that the vessel becomes a bastion of strength rather than, this basilisk of weakness, if you wanted to say, like something that's you're constantly out of your control and creating fear and lack of energy and then making it difficult to connect spiritually or mentally. So I wanted to create, and that's the same with On It, I wanted to create a foundational piece to take care of this human body, give the instruction manual, give the tools to repair that, to repair our organism and get ourselves in a strong, healthy, vibrant, vital state. So that in my subsequent books and with my subsequent work, we can start working on the heart, and then we can start working on the spirit, and then we can start working on community, and hopefully leave this place a hell of a lot better than when we found it.
Okay, so you've got your eye on the pyramid, basically. You're saying, all right, bottom of the pyramid is the physical apparatus.
Yep.
Right.
Got to take care of that first.
That's ground zero. It's like, man, make sure you're eating the right stuff, get some exercise, get enough sleep.
Yep. Yeah, use all the natural doctors, light, air, you know how to breathe, know how to hydrate, know how to have sex, know how to move your body, know how to sleep, you
the
know,
body
all of
is
these
an
things.
Extraordinary thing.
Extraordinary.
The body is the greatest, greatest gift that anybody could possibly imagine ever receiving. That's where it all starts. And we live in a society where historically the religious world kind of turns its back on the body, right? There's a sense that you, a monk, as a monk, you know, you're living a kind of antibody life. You're meditating or going, you know, you're praying all the time, but you're not having sex. You're kind of not really physically engaged, I think. There's tremendous history of shaming your connection to the body in religious traditions. And I feel like we're now, it's like a massive kind of turning point in the West
for people to be aware. Because why do we have a fucking body? Like, you're going to get there anyways. What are you in a rush for, everybody? Like, oh, you're in a rush to dispose of the body now? Well, you have one now. You're about to not have one. You're going to have plenty of time to just connect purely as consciousness with Source. How about have fun while you're in this fucking body? You know, how about that? Mm-hmm. How about that as a way to play the game? How about that as the reason why we have this thing? Right.
I mean, do you get a hard-on at the thought that you could offload your consciousness into some machine someplace and that you're going to live forever by getting out of the body?
I already know I'm going to live forever.
Right. Hello. Yeah. Exactly.
We just get new bodies and new experiences. Yeah. And I don't want to get trapped in some fucking machine. It sounds like hell.
The thing about the singularity that, frankly, does not connect for me at all is this notion that there's something better than the human body, and that, you know, that by not connecting to your own deep physicality, you're somehow going to transcend into some other place that's better. It feels to me it's the total opposite, is that the deeper you can go into the amazingness of what's available to you through the body, the more accessible all these spiritual realms become.
Yeah.
And then you're in deep connection with the planet, with those who are around you, with love, with your heart, with the openness of the sky, and you're able to be active in a positive way that raises the vibration of everything that you're engaging with.
Amen.
Oh God, I didn't mean to go that way. But but I love how you're laying the foundation around the focus on the body. And you come at that because you're an athlete, right? You play basketball.
Yep.
Were you a wrestler?
No, but I've trained martial arts, you know, most of my life. So just some jiu-jitsu, some Muay Thai, some boxing, you know.
Are you finding that when you talk about the spiritual stuff to the people who are connecting to you about how you take care of your body, that folks are picking that up?
They are. And it's because they don't look at me like some Indian ascetic who's let their body go, or some monk who's different than them. It's like, nah, man, I'm like you. Like, what are we doing today? We drinking whiskey and going chatting with girls at the bar? Cool, I'm in. You know, or are we you know, hitting the mats and we, you know, working out super hard? Okay, yeah, cool, I'm in. Oh, what are we doing? We're going wake surfing behind the boat today and drinking some beers? Okay, cool, I'm in. But hey, how about this? How about we go into ceremony and we, you know, go deep into our heart and see if there's any trauma there? How about we try and connect with these forces beyond, you know, who we are? And how about we do this too? And so the fact that I can connect with them on the levels where they're comfortable and they see me, oh, he's like me. This is same as me. But he's also doing this other stuff. Well, maybe I can give this other stuff a try. And I think that's been, you know, really cool to watch, that people who would not normally even be open to it, after I go through a few workouts and we do a few things on their level in their comfort zone where they're ready to connect, then, you know, when it comes to, you know, and I'll start planting the seeds like, hey, we're going down to Peru. Do you have any interest? And, you know, the first few years it's going to be hell no. But then, you know, by year three or four, they're like, hey, man, I'd really like to go to Peru with you. You know, I was like, okay, here we go, you know. And it's just interesting to see. And I think the problem is that everything's been polarized and people have allowed their ego to try and push down a different way of knowing the self, a different way of living. You know, so those who are very physically empowered have been pushing down those who are very spiritually empowered because that's threatening. And those who are spiritually empowered have been pushing down those who've been physically empowered because that's very threatening. And everybody's been in this antagonistic thing when really our birthright is all of it.
Right.
Our birthright is all the full spectrum.
Totally. And what's interesting about the moment that we live in is that folks coming from all these different spiritual lineages from all around the planet are basically now networking with each other. Mm-hmm. And sharing practices. And so you're able to see like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that there was a tantric tradition in India, which is really about, you know, connecting to, you know, to awareness through the body in a more deliberate way. Or, you know, there are, you know, the shamans in the Amazon have to go through a certain kind of process in order to be in tune with the spirits of nature that really involve pushing the body.
Yeah.
Right. And that there's, you know, this wide range of ways of getting access to that kind of awareness.
Absolutely.
And now we're in a place where we can sort of look at all of that and start to see what's going to make sense in the 21st century for somebody who can really take advantage of everything that's available and how to make yourself happy in the process and give yourself like a really good time.
And we need all the practices, you know, because the world has taken us. We have every opportunity for distraction. We have every opportunity for self-medication. We have every opportunity to go the other way, but we also have every opportunity to fix ourselves. And not that we're broken, actually, we're already whole, but every opportunity to course correct into a life more fully expressed, more fully aligned with Source, more fully in love. And, you know, so we have all the tools coming, and a lot of these tools are going to be coming legal soon, too, which is really going to shift how things are in the world.
Yeah, for real. So when you wrote this book, Own the Day, Own Your Life, did you have somebody in mind, a particular person in mind who the book was for?
Yeah, younger me.
Younger you.
Younger
what
me.
Age what?
You know, I mean, 16 and up. You know, I would say like
before or after your first medicine experience.
All of it.
Oh yeah,
all of it. You know, as soon as actually probably even younger. As soon as I started being an athlete. I mean, a lot of these things, like I said, this is about the using the natural elements. You know, like how to breathe right. Like we shouldn't be. You know, after every pledge of allegiance. And actually, what was cool is that one of my book launches, someone was talking about this because there's a study in there that says 6 deep breaths will actually lower your blood pressure and start to create a state change. You know, I was talking to a teacher who came to one of my book signings. He's like, hey, I'm teaching some of this stuff to the kids. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, so the kids know, all right, if I'm getting upset, if I'm angry, if I'm flustered, 6 deep breaths, that's what I need to do. And then they can start to take conscious control over their emotions. And so this book, you know, while I wrote it for me probably in my 20s, you know, a lot of it is going to apply to people a lot earlier because it's not about taking some fancy supplement or some fancy biohack. Yeah, I mentioned some of that stuff in there, but really it's about using these natural elements around us and using our human body in a way that's going to unlock the potential that we already have.
So you take people through a full day.
A full day.
In the book. What you eat, what you do when you first get up, eat, what kind of exercise you should do, all the way through nighttime and sleep.
Yeah. When the best time to have a glass of wine is, when, you know, some ways to think about sex, some ways to think about journaling, some, you know, everything is included in there. Workplace efficiency, what you should do on your way to work in the car. I mean, we try to cover an entire day.
And when you connect to your body and what it needs to be healthy, a deeper level of spiritual connection also becomes available to you.
Even if all you have is processed foods, you know, you can still take the bun off your burger, you know, you can still make some certain choices that are going to help manage blood sugar, and you can sure as shit take the minimum effective dose of the free doctors. Again, breath, cold, hot, sun, sleep, sex, like, you know, take your recommended daily movement, take your recommended daily allowance of those. And then just, you know, as I said, take the buns out of your Big Mac and like make some decisions that are going to help and use that as a bridge until you can get to a state, you know, like nothing's going to be perfect. No one's going to be in a perfect situation.
No. And it doesn't happen overnight. And we all have gone through this process of like going from, man, I need a second Big Mac.
Yeah.
To, whoa, I'm actually a little hypoglycemic.
Yeah.
Maybe I should stop eating all of that sugar. It's like, oh, what happens when I stop eating that sugar? It's like, oh, you start to respond a little bit. The body goes through changes. And it happens in phases. It doesn't happen like overnight. It doesn't happen right away. And so just taking the first step in this direction, sometimes that's the hardest thing because it means you got to uncouple yourself from the groupthink that you're not even aware you're in, right?
Yep.
But then when you start to take that walk, you'd be amazed where it will lead, where it can lead if you're paying attention and noticing what's coming at you, what you're inviting in because you're taking the walk. Right? Does that resonate for you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So your book, in many ways, it feels like that's one of the, it's like, it's a fantastic way for people to open into this.
Yeah, this is, you know, every one of these chapters has been and could be an entire book. Okay, what's the morning routine? Okay, what's the, you know, how do you use breath in the cold? That's been a book or a couple of different books. And then, all right, what's your nutrition plan? Well, that's another book. And then, you know, so, but you don't want 16 books to figure out what you're going to do for a single day. So we took all of those clinical academic references. We put it all into a day that really makes sense and a day that can support a fully expressed life and a life that's worth living, a life that you're really going to enjoy.
I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, man.
This is awesome.
Yeah, it's been great to chat with you.
It's been great to chat with you. So people, you all should check out onnit.com, aubreymarcus.com, the podcast, and Own the Day, Own Your Life. Probably has its own website. Every book's got its own website.
Yeah, ownthedaybook.com. And then on social media, I'm probably most active on Instagram. So always writing my latest thoughts there. So that's at Aubrey Marcus.
Take it easy. Have a great day.
All right. Sounds good, brother.
I want to give thanks again to Aubrey Marcus for being on the show. And thanks to you for joining us here on The Evolver. You can follow us on Instagram at The Evolver Podcast and on Facebook at Evolver Social Movement. Remember to subscribe to The Evolver on iTunes or on the podcatcher of your choice. We'd love to know what you think. Please post a review to iTunes or email us at theevolver@evolver.net. I want to thank our producer, Jose Alfaro, and the whole Acast team. Our theme music is Measure by Measure by Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, from his album, The Secret Song. And our interstitial music is Sunu by The Human Experience and Rising Appalachia. That's all for now. We'll be back next week.
Find the others.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.